Welcome, citizens. You're listening to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. Here, thinkers and doers always have a key to the city. The mayor is in, so office hours start now.
New Amsterdam Radio starts now. What's going on, citizens? Flobo Boys here. Thank you so much for checking out another episode of New Amsterdam Radio, part of the New Amsterdam Entertainment Platform Network, Empire, whatever you want to call it. Many, many thanks and salutations. Learn more at newamsterdam.com. That's K-N-A-W-Amsterdam.com. My guest this week is a man by the name of Kevin Sampath, who's out of Sydney, Australia, which is a country I got to just visit, and I mentioned that in the show. We get to talk about Australian culture as long, and also having a different and very diverse portfolio of different entrepreneurial things at once, and what that means for someone who's doing these different businesses while maintaining a 9-to-5. In some ways, a very much a classic episode. It takes me back to like episodes 45 through 55. We're getting people that were trying to start their journeys while maintaining the bill-paying side of things. So hopefully you enjoy that thoroughly. But as always, thank you so much for making this part of your podcasting diet. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there, and I really appreciate that. And be honest with you, just a little bit of a behind-the-scenes situation. Of course, this started off as an Anchor podcast. You could probably tell by going back to some of the early episodes. And Anchor, now called Spotify Podcasters, or Podcasting for Spotify. It's Spotify for whatever's. They're changing some of the things around. And so you'll see over the next couple of months what that may look like. I'm not sure what that will look like as far as the intros and outros and stuff, or how we're going to make that work. But just know that we're not going anywhere as of yet, even if I have to move the show to another feed or another hosting service or what have you. You know, Anchor worked for me back in the day, but you know, good things usually disappear or get bought up by bigger things. That's kind of the nature of the game. And again, I'm only being transparent with you because you've been transparent with me all the time. And also, speaking of transparency, why have you tried SeatGeek yet? You know what I mean. Listen, there are sporting events, there are concerts, there are anything that has a ticket attached to it happening in your town and nearby all the time. So why would you want to pay full price? You see, with SeatGeek, you can find the best deals for the best shows happening near you or when you're on vacation. That's what I do. And maybe you can try this as well. Use promo code FLOBITO. That's me, FLOBITO, for $20 off your first order. $20 can buy you a lot. That's like one beer, I think, maybe a couple of hot dogs, depending on where you go. I mean, look, anyway, you can do a lot with $20. That's right, SeatGeek, promo code FLOBITO. Get that $20 discount on your first order, and you can go anywhere without paying full price. SeatGeek, FLOBITO, check it out. That said, I did my housekeeping. Let's sit back and relax. And now it's time for my talk with Kevin Sampath. Welcome back to New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creatives. It is I, the mayor, Flobo Boys, in the mayor's office, chatting with the people who are doing the thing. And well, my guest does so many things, it made my head spin. We're talking about what it takes to be an entrepreneur and shifting needs and wants and customer bases and all that. Please welcome Kevin Sampath to the show. What's going on, Kevin?
Hey, man. Good to come on, Flobo, and thanks for having me on. Mate, I love your energy. It's 8 a.m. here in Australia.
Oh, no, it's the exact energy.
It's the energy hit that I need in this morning. That and this little cup of caffeine. So yeah. If I can get you packaged into a bottle every morning, that's exactly what I need, man.
I feel it, man. I actually visited Australia for the first time last month. I went to both Perth and Melbourne covering the wrestling event over there.
Didn't come to the best city in the world.
If you mean Sydney, I went to the airport twice. I'm not sure if that counts, though.
What were you doing over there?
So the WWE had the Elimination Chamber out in Perth because no one goes to Perth for fun. Like that's a city no one talks about here. Yeah. And also in Los Angeles, the majority of Australian expats and immigrants are from Melbourne. So I wanted to see what Melbourne looked like. So I hadn't had a chance to do Sydney. I want to do it next time. I hear the weather's a lot more tolerable because it was pretty spicy out there in Perth.
It's beautiful here in Sydney, but Melbourne's known as the art capital. So you probably went to the right areas if you like your arts and creatives.
Yeah.
But if you like your beaches and your restaurants, food and stuff, Sydney's where you come to.
Okay. Wait, are you like a, well, how was that? Are you a rugby guy, a football guy? Or are you not?
Rugby league. Okay. So I love rugby league, follow rugby league, used to play it a little bit. But cricket is our kind of national sport here in Australia. So I see you like baseball.
I like baseball, but I'm actually, I actually went to the NRL Vegas and I'm a big fan.
Oh, no way.
The Roosters, East to win.
That's my team too. Yeah, that's unreal.
East to win, baby. I got to go visit out there. It's pretty cool. It's actually the day it came out from Australia. I went to Las Vegas to watch Australian rugby. It was surreal.
This is actually because they've been talking about expanding this game in America, right? Yeah. When we watched it on TV, we just saw Aussies there. So we're like, no real American has taken it up. And this is amazing just to see you buy a jersey and everything.
Oh, what's funny, because like I got into it with the pandemic. I'm not sure what got shut down over there, but all sports pretty much stopped except for Korean baseball and rugby league. And so I watch a lot more games than I would love to. But the first game I watched was like, I think it was Rooster Sea Eagles. And I was like, okay, cool. This team sounds cool. So wow, I became a fan since the pandemic. So
that's awesome, man. You're more Aussie than we think.
Yeah.
I like your Australian citizenship now.
Dude, I loved it. I wish I could apply, man. It was great. But I'm not here to talk about my trip to Australia. We're talking about you, man. To say you walk the walk as an entrepreneur is a bit of an understatement. You are in charge of a bunch of businesses. Before we get to what those are, let me ask you, were you somebody pressured to have a real job and you jumped out to entrepreneurship, or did like fall into it? Like, what was your path in the road?
Yeah, when we talk about real job and corporates, mm-hmm. I'm still living that corporate life. So I'm still kind of working my 9-to-5. And I think it's important to, especially, so I've got a young family. Mm-hmm. And the whole journey of entrepreneurship has really been new to me over the last couple of years. So you've been through the same situation, but it's really scary jumping into it. And so I've had the blessing of being able to run, you know, a finance teams and companies and use that as a safe job in order to try all my various side hustles, entrepreneurship schemes, so to speak.
Sure.
And, you know, still pay the bills and keep my wife and kids fed, which is great. So working a 9-to-5 job in finance, loving that as well because I learned so much from it. And then I do all my little side hustle gigs on the side, which my companies, which I work for, have been really, gracious in letting me do on the side, knowing my passion behind it. But yeah, man, I think that's the new age model. Run a corporate job and run a business on the side as well, because, you know, you want to get to that point where that second income is being able to sustain your whole family, and then you can flip it around.
I'm actually glad you said that, because I know a lot of people in the last couple episodes were just dedicated in doing the entrepreneurship pursuit. And I've been lucky enough to do this full time. Well, I won't say lucky. There's some months where I'm like, oh, I ain't lucky at all. But let me ask you a question about the energy level, because, you know, you are doing a 9-to-5, which means I assume that you have a boss at a 9-to-5. And then you have kids that may need help with homework. And you know, you may have a significant other that wants date night as well. Like, how do you manage all of those things, all those plates spinning in your energy level at the same time?
Yeah. One thing I wish I did is I wish I started doing this earlier when I had no commitment. You know, I had no wife, had no kids. But, you know, when you're young, you're lazy, you love going out and partying with the boys. But now, energy levels, you know, I think one of the biggest things is learning about drive and what drives you and why you do certain things. And I think when I started doing this, a lot of my drive was, oh, I just love to make a few more dollars. And mm-hmm. I found that I was much lazier when it came to that. So I'd work a hard day, I'd come home and be like, what's a few more dollars? I'll just go and rest or watch Netflix. Yeah. But now my drive is, you know, family, right? It's supporting family, doing things for your family and making, I guess, validating the sacrifice they make for you. Because there's many nights where, you know, I'm unavailable doing stuff and my wife has to take care of the kids. I want to be able to validate to her that, hey, all this hard work I'm putting in, I want that to go somewhere. And I don't want to be having, you know, lazy days or nights off, because there's all this time that you've given me that I want to be able to repay. That, and I guess you have to be really interested in growth. So a lot of entrepreneurship is basically doesn't go anywhere. I just love doing things, learning things. And even when it doesn't go anywhere, I love growing from it. So just having that long-term perspective, I think, is really important.
So let's talk about your portfolio, because you have a lot of disparate businesses in play now, some with sports, some with more personal wellness. Like, what exactly is in, like, as of right now, in your portfolio?
Yeah. So there's three big things. So one is this media kind of venture that we created, which was essentially a docuseries we created off the back of the sporting team that I play for. So it started off as a little bit of a hobby, you know, giggle, turned up into something bigger, and it's now in Australia's largest sporting platform as of a couple of months ago, 6 months ago, mm-hmm. which we want to use now to grow into something bigger to promote this game of cricket across Australia.
Oh, and which kind of cricket, may I ask?
So cricket's like baseball, right? So
I'm familiar, but I mean like test cricket, like T20, like...
Yeah, so for us, it's local cricket.
Okay.
One of the things that we find, especially growing up, is cricket is very cultural here for Australia, but also for certain cultures. So my background's Indian in India. And so it's very, you know, you grow up, if you're Aussie or an Indian, you play cricket. But
yeah,
we went to Fiji, I think 6 years ago, and there's this whole community there that plays cricket. My mate lived in Japan for 5 years. There's a whole community there that plays cricket. And so we want to create stories through our docuseries and other ventures to show the kids on the street that, hey, just because you don't look like the normal cricket players, you can play cricket as well because it's an exciting game. Mm-hmm. And so our team has, you know, like 7-8 nationalities in it, you know, from Indonesia, China, Fiji, India, Pakistan. There's this big concoction of nationalities that play together that we wanted to display to the world that everyone can play cricket together and, you know, it's a game for everyone. So that's the first thing.
Yeah,
It's this little venture called
Park. Before we move on, I'm also West Indian, so I totally get that whole thing.
Oh, nice.
Play. Yeah, the Windies.
One of the great countries.
Good. Yeah, used to be, but now.
they had a big win in Australia over the summer, man.
Yeah, I crossed the fingers that started something else. I do casually, but I know the rise of T20 has kind of eclipsed that with the youth. The T20 is the two-hour fun version. But when I was a kid, it was test matches, and that was like a three-day, four-day affair. Like it was a slog. Yeah.
And that's what West Indies were famous for, right? They had really good test cricket teams. And I think that's where the decline of cricket came because there was all these other offerings across other sports. But cricket, since the emergence of T20, has started to get in those new crowds and new, you know, kids and stuff through the sport. So that's been exciting, and we wanted to use that as well too. But weekend cricket here is such a big part of life. Like most Aussies play some sort of sport during the winter or summer, mm-hmm. and cricket's one during the summer that adults and kids play competitively, especially because it's, you know, low stress, we joke about it because sometimes you can go and just stand in a field for 5 hours and it doesn't take much fitness to do that, mm-hmm. which is why it's an easy one. But it's a great, especially in this age where men are looking for, you know, supporting their mental health, looking for mates. This is a great way for people to come into communities and meet each other and, you know, play a great game together.
Yeah. And so your other businesses?
Yeah. So that's one. The other one's this podcast that we're running, which is, again, with a similar group of guys. And this is all about, you know, we grew up where essentially immigrants that have come to this country thanks to our parents. And we found it hard to level up or become adults in this environment here and corporatize very quickly because there's two trains of thought. If you become corporate, you got to get serious in life really quickly. Or if you want to go the other route as a creative, you're basically not taking your life serious at all. And so we want to create this podcast to talk about leveling up in career, but also things like relationships, parenthood, talk about, you know, relevant things that you would talk at a bar. And how this all started was myself and, you know, 9 other guys, we wanted to create a venture where we could put in money every month, make these little cool investments and buy a bar by 2030, just because that'd be a pretty cool thing to do as a bunch of mates. But it turned into something a bit more serious through a podcast and a couple of other initiatives that we're doing. So that's the other media side that we're kind of ticking along with. And, you know, this is fun for us as well because at the moment it's one of the only reasons we get to catch up. So we're doing this together, especially as successful corporates, because there's people in our group that are partners of firms, people are directors, people are, you know, basically high flyers, but when you sit in a bar with a beer across them, they just seem like another normal person because, you know, we're all mates, obviously. But it's great to learn from these minds for me personally, but also to share to the world the insights that they have and also get, you know, cool people on that we can learn from as well. So that's been interesting, similar to what you guys are trying to do. And the last one, which is kind of, you know, I say it hasn't been released yet, but I've been telling everyone about it because we've been using test dummies, is we're creating this remedy. And as non-science or non-food backgrounds, we're creating this remedy for people to take before they go out to help them feel better the day after. And again, solving a personal problem, because the older I get, I can have 3 or 4 beers now and still feel terrible the day after when I want to be feel present with my kids or when I want to do some family time. Even if I cut myself down to, you know, the bare minimum, sometimes I don't feel great the day after. So this is meant to help you feel great the day after. And it's been a wild journey, actually, 14 months of, you know, research, testing, you know, talking to manufacturers, getting samples in, testing it on our friends. Hopefully,
do they know about your testing that time on them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've been pretty supportive. And sometimes, you know, we get, this is where testing with your friends is bad, because you'll get the false feedback and they'll be like, yeah, this tastes great, you know, definitely worked. And so now we're starting to test with people outside our social circle as well, just to see how it goes.
It sounds like a crazy day. Like after playing cricket and then going to the pub the next day, you got to load up.
Yeah. Well, that's a big part of Australian culture is, you know, having a beer after anything. You watch the sports, you have a beer, similar to Americans, right?
Yeah.
It revolves, rightly or wrongly so, revolves around that alcohol culture. And we enjoy parts of it, but we also wanted to create ways where we can enjoy our social time together, but spend time with our families and be present as well.
Yeah. So I got to ask the structure of it all. Do you have like one email address for all these things, or do you have like different personas? You have a virtual assistant. How do you manage the inquiries and updates on either one of these ventures?
Yes. So I've got email addresses for each of them. I tried a virtual assistant 12 months ago, and I'm just too much of a perfectionist. And I think for the price I was paying as well, I wasn't getting what I wanted. And I realized as well, I'm just a poor organizer of my time. And I was just lazy and got a virtual assistant because I was like, God, I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
So I've been more methodical over the last 24 months in organizing my time better and devoting spaces of my week to that. And a great part of that as well, so in relationships, right? I was doing that by myself, but the last 2 years I've gotten my wife involved and we do like a family, you know, planning thing. And I kind of get her across what I'm trying to achieve during the year or what I'm trying to do during the year and how I'm going to structure my days and see if that works with her and our family and have that similar dialogue with her as well. And I think that's important because I don't want to just disappear for random days and be like, oh, I'm doing this now and then I'm doing this. But also I need that accountability because I chase the shiniest toys or like the shiniest business ideas. And so last couple of years has been, hey, you know, I love you. Please keep me accountable on this stuff, but this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm hoping this goes somewhere. Love your support, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. You got to keep everyone on the team in the loop. When you have a moment in your business or a new product or something you have to approve, like who is on part of like your personal counsel? Like who is your board of trustees? Who is the inner circle of people you trust to confide in when things go wrong?
Yeah. So definitely, you know, my wife's a big part of that, but I've got these close group of mates. So there's the guys that we do the podcast with. I would call them kind of my board of advisors because they've got a wealth of experience. You know, like I said, partners of firms, runners of small business, some are in the army, some, you know, and legal profession. They're kind of well-rounded for me to ask advice from. And I think it's really great as well because sometimes as men, we feel the pressure of competing with each other. But I love that I've just grown up with some of these guys and I can ask really humble questions and get really humble responses, but also sometimes get a clip over the year when I'm not, you know, doing things right or if I'm going off track. I think that's really important in, you know, in corporate or even friendship settings, because having those honest conversations, like I've had mates come up to me and really flag, like I'm really bad with my finances. And after nights out or even, you know, after certain situations, I'll have my friends come up to me and say, hey, I think you need to be doing this better in your life, or I think you need to think about how you deal with this situation because it's probably not helping you. And, you know, they genuinely want to see you do better. And it's the same thing in business instance. If I'm doing something that's, you know, kind of going off the wrong track, they'll really pull me up and help me understand sometimes the blinders that I have and help me lift those off. So yeah. I've got those board of advisors. I've got obviously my wife, and you know, sometimes it's good to even talk to people like yourself and just reach out to people. I've done that multiple times on, you know, LinkedIn, which is massive here. Reach out to people and essentially just get people's counsel. And people love helping people. That's people are just afraid to ask sometimes.
I don't know how you navigate LinkedIn, man. I go there and it's people just bragging about their things. Like, you don't think I would do this, but I did. Enter. I hired somebody. Enter. It just goes on for and on forever.
Oh, man. It is a cesspool now of crap.
Yeah, right.
But I love it. I love it for the ability to reach out to people. That's kind of lost its impact too, because it's so salesy now. And every day, you know, leaders get 20 DMs in their LinkedIn profiles, which are automated. So you can't separate the real people from the bots.
Yeah.
But it has helped me. And, you know, I think it's bigger in Australia than it is in America from what I see. So I think America, you know, X and all those platforms are massive. Whereas in Australia, a lot of people don't really use that as much. Whereas LinkedIn's massive here, which is a great tool for us to use. And it's easier for us to use as well, particularly given the spread of states.
Yeah. Can I go back to the podcast? Can I ask, why is it called Banjo?
It started off as soon as it's over.
I dare you.
It's kind of an endearing term. So it started off, we were all traveling in South Africa and we heard some of these words as, for lack of a better explanation, it can be misconstrued as a swear word in an Indian language. But we kept making a joke of people that didn't understand the language in cricket and in public when we were in South Africa using this word and saying banjo. And just people just kept saying it as a funny kind of joke. And so it just stuck as a word. And then it started off being embedded into our group chats. And then as it kept getting embedded into our group chats, we named our group chat after it because it just became funny. And you know, it probably was funnier at the time, but then it just stuck as our name. And now it's our group is known as that. And we call ourselves, not like we're like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but we're like the Banjo Boys. And the girls in our group, like the wives and partners, are the Banjettes. And so, and so it's funny, like when we talk to each other or when we invite people to events, we're like, hey guys, bring... this is for the banjos and banjets. We've got a Christmas party on. Come on and, you know, bring your kids and stuff like that. And it's just stuck. And now we're like, we don't know what else to call this pod because we're such a wide variety of topics. Even though we're trying to help people. And we're like, well, what do we call? We're banjo. We'll just chuck that in there. And, you know, if we have to hone the name later, that's what we'll do.
There's so many times I'll ask people a question about why they named or something. Like, yeah, we had an idea. It was funny and it stuck. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, what do we do with it? We don't do anything else with it. Would you see that like thing, like expand out of the things like helpful videos kind of a thing, or is it kind of like just a podcast for now? Like, what is that of your ventures? What do you see the banjo stuff growing?
I want that to grow into something that people can go to navigate career and real like life issues. Like, what we want to grow that to, particularly from a career perspective, is solve real life situations. So one of the things we've been talking about, so one of the guys in the podcast is an MBA, and we've been trying to think about how we can bring in corporate real life situations around, you know, say this business suffered this issue in this month, they need to solve it by this month, this is what we think they need to do, help us solve it, and take everyone through like a real life scenario and practical examples to basically help people come in and sit in on a business floor and understand the workings of what happens, but also then navigate different parts of their lives as adult males or women and think about things like relationships, parenthood, and how they all interlink into your corporate careers. And even then bring in a side kind of touch of, you know, side hustles and all of this other stuff that comes into people running their lives. And what we want to do is really just explore growth, explore stories, and help people see that they don't have to be content with, you know, 9-to-5s, or they don't need to be content with what they're doing just because that's what everyone else has done for the last 50 to 100 years, and help them really expand their knowledge, because that's really something that I wish I had when I was, you know, that those younger ages. So I'd love that to be the biggest, so that I'm putting my most time into that at the moment. Just to grow it and get it off the ground. And, you know, it's good to have that support around us as well to do that.
It is funny how a lot of people say that if I had more information at my disposal, I would have done better. But there's also like gatekeeping too. It's like we all want more information, but we get weird about it. Or something weird about it. This is a kind of a question that's up my alley in particular. You do have the content side with the Banjo thing, and you do have the product side with your After Night Remedy. What's been the challenge of launching both, two different kinds of businesses at the same time?
I think the challenge has been from a product side, not knowing the space. The content side is much easier because I think you can just put yourself out there and go straight away and tinker with it. And that's where I've enjoyed it, because every week I'm learning something. Something's not working, you tweak that approach. Whereas the product side is so slow. Like if something's not working, it's another, you know, 4 weeks in development. And so patience is something that I really struggle with. So balancing those two has been something that I think has been a lot of growth for me, particularly I think as a finance corporate as well, you're so used to just dealing with situations and seeing the results of them straight away in a corporate environment. Whereas product, you know, I really empathize with people in product settings, even if they're smaller, it just takes so long to continue to hone and get your product up to market, only for then that to fail sometimes. You know, you can spend 24 months in a product on market and it might not go anywhere, and you've spent all this time and seen it as, you might see it as a waste, but I've from the get-go thought this is such a great learning experience for me. I'm really grateful to be able to do this because, you know, my dad, my mom could work corporate jobs and do the hard yards for people like me, that we can take these risks and do these cool things. So it's always good to have that perspective and not put so much pressure on yourself.
There's no right answer here, but is a wrong answer here. Is it the name of the game to sunset the corporate stuff to focus on the entrepreneurial work, or are you okay with being both at the same time?
100%. I mean, my long-term goal is to run my own shop, whatever that looks like. And I'd love to be able to sustain my whole life just through these ventures that I'm doing. But in saying that, you know, I do have the comfort. Comfort's such a big thing. Like, no matter what fails, it's easy to just fall back on your 9-to-5. And, you know, particularly when you're okay at doing what you do, it's good to continue doing that. But I'd love to be able to transition that out. And, you know, that's the goal, and being very vocal with that with my wife, which is why she's given me all that support as well. How have you gone? Because you're juggling a couple of things as well, right? How have you found, I guess, and supporting your life with it?
It's a little different for me, because the one time I dabbled into product-based businesses, I tell this to a lot of my guests, so if you're a long-term listener, bear with me. So New Amsterdam started off as a notebook company, started off as a stationery company.
Right, okay.
Because the idea was that I came from comedy, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York, and a lot of my friends came from hip-hop, and they would, no matter what the apps were, they were still writing stuff down on notebooks. And notebooks, for those small kind of things, are either super expensive, like a Moleskine, or super cheaply made, like a Piccadilly, if you know the brands. And so I wanted something that was high quality, but that was like cost effective. And I wanted to build the community like I do with the podcast. So all my jobs now are all content based or live event based. So I have that through line. So it's a little different for me. But yeah, I think ironically, the pandemic was good to me, because everyone was at home. And I got up and I treated this podcast space like I was an own network. I had 9 different podcasts, from Star Trek to wrestling to this to that. And I felt like I was running my own TV network, or just my face. Now I do weddings. I think in UK and Australia, say I present event. and it's so much fun. And I want to be able to do that. But there's some months, like now, it's as I record this, March 26th, and I'm looking at rent due this week going, how the heck am I gonna do that? Whereas there's some months I go, oh my gosh, these clients won't leave me alone. I got so much stuff going on. So feast or famine. But I've dabbled going back into corporate. I got pushed out into corporate by accident. I got fired on Thanksgiving Day 1 year, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. Once you could do both, I've done both for a long time, but once you jump out into the entrepreneur stuff, you become the worst employee. You're just like, that's dumb. Why am I circling back? I want to do it now. When's lunch? You just become the worst employee on the planet, you know?
Yeah. So did you, comedy is your background as well? Because I'm really fascinated, right? I feel like a lot of the successful entrepreneurs I see have some sort of public speaking or comedy background, because in order to sell your products or even do something really well, you need to be really charismatic, hold a conversation really well, but also take people on a journey. And I feel like comedy, like just listening to you, you're a great storyteller, obviously humorous, charismatic. Is that something that you grew up doing? And that was your kind of your original creative outlet?
That's a good question. My original creative outlet was I was a writer, and I still think I'm a writer first. But yeah. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a host of my own late night talk show. So like in the UK, there's a show called Saturday Night's Takeaway, which is pretty much what I want to do, like games and audience participation. And I had a near-death experience about 10 years ago. So long story short, wow. I used to be very, very heavy. I used to weigh about 27 stone. I lost a bunch of weight, but I had a lot of the skin. So I had the skin surgery to get it removed. And then my suture line had opened up afterwards. I almost bled out. And so while I was bleeding out, I say so quickly now, oh, I was bleeding out, but by the time it was traumatic. I was like, hey, if I ever survive this, this is my second chance at life. Let me try to ride a motorcycle. Let me try to do comedy. So comedy came that way, but you're absolutely right. Because when you're an entrepreneur, or if you work for if you're hunting for your own clients, you have to be affable, because you aren't Apple. There isn't 20 years of product innovations and tech talks to talk about what you can do. You got to sell what you can do. And that's been kind of the thing for me. So comedy is always a dream. I want to be able to do comedy first, but because of that, you still got to pay bills. And so I DJ weddings and I'll read your announcements. I do voiceover stuff as well. So it all kind of rolls together.
That's amazing, man. It's crazy that you've seen that journey now from writing comedy. I mean, I'm a big believer in people that write well can articulate their thoughts well through speech. Yeah. And, you know, the fact that you started that way, you know, I think it's a great testament firstly to you, but also to people listening, right? It's how to go on that journey to speaking well. And, you know, obviously through comedy, now you've been able to open a lot of other ventures. So
yeah,
good on you. That's a really encouraging story.
Just get me back into the comedy circuit in Australia. Actually, I'll tell you a story before we wrap this up. So the comedy career has been a bit of a decline on my end. So if you look at the pie of all the things I'm working on, comedy is getting harder, because it's getting harder to get my friends to come out. We get older, yeah. We get families. It's like, hey man, sitters cost a lot. I'm not taking my kid out. I get it.
Yeah.
And what actually happened is I left, because I went to Australia last month to cover Elimination Chamber for Wrestling Inc. as a wrestling journalist, which is something I didn't think existed, but it is.
Amazing.
And I flew into Perth, and I did a show in Perth, and I bombed. Well, I didn't bomb. I had war misses and hits, because apparently it's different in Western Australia than most of Australia. And I was telling my mom, I called my mom from Perth. And for those who don't know, that's like $2.50 a minute, because it's international. I'd be like, oh, mom, what am I doing with my life? This is terrible. I thought I was done. But what ended up happening was I flew to Melbourne, and I had one of those one-day tours. My tour guy was a comedian, and he was like, oh, yeah, it's a little different here in Australia, different region, different states. Try it again. Did a show in Melbourne, and I was like, oh, man, they actually love me out here. They get it. Like, I'm a fat kid here, too. Like, hey, look, I like Shirley Biscuits. You like Tim Tams. It all works out.
Yeah.
And I realized that's kind of what made it fun, and that's why it kind of like put me back into the game. But back to what you were saying, there's days I doubt myself every day. There's days where I'm like, what am I doing? I should be going and get a real job, but I can't do it anymore, you know?
Yeah. Can I ask you a question on comedy? Because I love
– yeah.
That fascinates me, that whole industry. Two things. How do you practice and remember your content? Because I always look at a comedian and I'm like, man, if you just stumble on one part of your content, that could like create a derailing effect to the rest of your show.
That is absolutely a valid question.
That's the first thing. And the second thing is practicing delivery and emotion. Like, is that something that you literally stand in front of a mirror and practice your delivery of your content? And you know, no matter what anyone throws at you, you still have to keep going. Like if there's a boo, you still have to keep going with it. Is that mindset? Is that
I wouldn't say literally in front of America. That makes me uncomfortable. I'll start and I'm like, is that a zit? Ew. And I'll get distracted. But that's how it kind of happens. So everyone's, and this is technique. This is literally what technique is. So everyone has their own approach to it, whether they write it down, whether they just go out and just say, I'm just going to talk stream of consciousness and write down what works. But this is how I do it. So I got something, I think about something that either ticks me off or I think is funny to begin with. And I will write down the full joke in my head, whatever that full joke is. Then I start reciting it all. I feel bad for my neighbors, but I'll say it out loud all throughout my house, because you can't do it in your head. If you do it in your head, you don't get a semblance of time. You slur your words. You got to say, whatever over and over again in the shower, on dates, like in the whatever, just all over the house, in the car, just say it out loud as you want to, and then you do an open mic. And that's about timing, because you have the microphone in your hands and you're working with your body and what you want to do and how you want to say it. And the more times you recite it, you realize the things that weren't as funny you tend to forget, and the things that's hilarious tend to fit. And so by the time I do a joke in front of a paying audience, it's at least 75 to 100 times. Yeah. And then it's the audition process. Is it funny to them? And that's my point. I flew to Australia. So this is the first time I'm in Australia ever. So yeah. Perth is my first example of Australia ever, which is surreal.
What a place to start.
I know. And I know this now. And I did a joke and I just totally died. And I was like, well, either I'm not funny, or Americans aren't funny, or Australians hate people. Like, what's going on? But that's kind of, every crowd is different. And then you have to decide, okay, wrong crowd, or there's something wrong here. So that comes the workshopping thing. So in the olden days, guys like Chris Rock, took them 3, 4, 5 years to have specials, because that was a whole process. But now with Netflix and YouTube, you can have a special every weekend if you want to.
Yeah. And it's really hard as well, because you'd have to separate your identity from your content, because it's easy to walk out from something like that and, you know, get no laughs. You're like, ah, this sucks. You know, no one likes me. I'm not funny. Blah, blah, and go down that really. So, you know, I'm amazed that comedians can always pick themselves back up and, you know, basically go to the next gig and do it all again.
It's kind of like your personality, man. I mean, some days someone could tell you a joke, you're like, ah, screw you. You know what I mean? And other days you're like, wait, what do you mean? And it's a lot of that stuff too, because especially if it's a joke. I actually had a joke about the night I almost died. Obviously, I say it funnier, but when no one laughs at that one, I take extra offense, because I'm literally telling you. And it's it's a balance there. But I don't know. But anyway, thanks to Melbourne. I haven't quit. That's
the whole point. Redeem the Australian tour.
Exactly. Shout out to Victoria.
Let me know when you're in Sydney, Flubber. I'll come down.
I got to do it. I was kind of mad because the flight from LA to Sydney had no Wi-Fi. Thanks, Qantas. But I want to be able to check out Sydney if I have a chance. Because if you think of Australia, you think of the Opera House, and that's in Sydney. So maybe one these days. So book me, man. What's up? Let's go, Roosters. Right, absolutely. East to win. So we asked our guests all these questions. They're kind of like department questions, almost like a lightning round on the show. And of course, you don't have to have an answer, but if you didn't, tisk, 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 right? Yeah. Do you believe in days off? And if so, what do you do to celebrate?
I do believe in days off, and it's usually time with the fam or in front of the TV watching sports. That's best way to do it, with a beer in hand.
What's your beer choice?
We've got a couple here. I like the 4X Summer, which people will hate to hear because it's a Queensland beer. This is New South Wales and Queensland rivalry. But I also don't mind like a Han Super Dry or a Better Beer. I loved, actually, it's not even American. When I was in America, so I did exchange in America for 6 months, but I love Molson's, which is a Canadian beer.
Yeah, I was like, that's not even American. Yeah. I'd say it's a little light and refreshing. Where'd you stay? Yeah, I'd say it's.
I was in upstate New York, so I was just north of Syracuse, in a little town called Potsdam in the
middle. At SUNY Potsdam is a school out there. It's a college town. I mean,
So I was right next to that. I was in a uni called Clarkson University. So, tech.
I actually went to, because I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn, but you don't venture up to the state unless you have to. But I went there to I had a job at the Hall of Fame, and it's the most beautiful place to look at. Like, if you took a picture of upstate New York, you're like, great. But those roads are just ice over. You're like, how do people live like this? Cars. hopefully you do that too much. So talk about the United States. What's left on your travel bucket list? Where do you want to go visit?
So I've never been to Europe. I've been talking about going to Europe for a long time. So that's probably next. But I'd also love to go back to, so my background's India. I haven't been there in 10 years. I'd love to go back there and do a proper tour of the southern parts of India.
Okay. How far south? If you don't mind me asking.
I've gone all the way down south. I'm from a little town called Coimbatore, which is between kind of Bangalore and Chennai. But I'd love to do that whole southern region, because it's such a big part of, even as I grew up in Australia, I didn't like to think of how big a part of it is of me. It is such a big part of me, and, you know, all my mannerisms and the interests I have in music and creatives stem from a lot of there. So,
sidebar, I assume you're first generation or second generation? First?
First generation, yeah.
Do you struggle with that as well? I'm saying that as a West Indian American, where it's kind of like, Well, I'm both, but I'm neither, but I'm kind of everything. Like, is that a thing?
I did. I definitely went through this crisis. It wasn't a crisis to me, but I grew up at school kind of pushing all my Indian side away because that was I just felt like that was the right thing to do. But as I've grown up, I've really leaned in on that culture. And I think that's been really a great journey for me because I've grown to appreciate it more than I would have, I think, if I just did it the other way. Like, I've got mates that live in India and Middle East. They're still very Indian, but they don't see how beautiful that is.
Right.
The background of their culture.
I totally derailed the show because I had the same thing too. I figured, my parents came to United States. I'm gonna be American as I can. And then you get to a certain age, you're like, does my government like me back? You want to be able to have that second half. And I always wonder whether or not I'll be like the guy wearing like the brand new jersey at the end of the season. Like, hey guys, am I a fan too when I go back? So I wanted to talk to that about first generation.
But Australia's a very multicultural society, similar to the States. So I think everyone's gone through that understanding together as well, which is great. And as the world evolves, you'll see more and more of that multiculturalism seep in.
Yeah, crossing fingers. Everyone, everyone collects something. What do you collect?
What do I collect? Ooh, kids? Nah.
Off the street.
I've got two. Yeah. I think I'm big on memories, like especially something over the last 10 years around material gifts versus memories. I really love collecting memories, and particularly now, like the more time I spend with my kids, sometimes I just sit back and I'm like, I can't believe I have this memory with you, and I can't believe I get to do this now. So I think that's a beautiful thing. But also, like, I'm a man of faith, and I think one thing you collect as well is being able to show love to others and seeing kind of the brightness of their face or their face bright up, or being able to make someone's day just through love that you show through to them. So that's something that I love being able to be more conscious of in my life. It's very hard when we're self-absorbed and self-centered sometimes.
Wow. You're like deep. I'm like, coffee mugs. You're like, no, memories and faith and the general plane. In all seriousness, man, it was a lot of fun chatting with you. A lot of stuff to learn about you as well. If someone's listening right now and they want to follow you or connect with you or book you for something, how do they go about doing that?
So we're on YouTube, and the podcast is probably the best place to get me at Banjo Pod on YouTube, but I'm also on LinkedIn under Kevin Sampath. I'm also on Instagram and stuff, but LinkedIn, YouTube, that's the best place to get me. Happy to chat, happy to share stories. I'm all about learning, and I've really enjoyed this. But I think next time you're in Sydney, get you down to a Roosters game, do a comedy gig, cook up some Caribbean curry. I didn't get to talk about that because that's something that I really love, the West Indian curries and stuff.
There's a lot of
similarities, man.
Say less. I feel like that has to be done. Like, comedy in Sydney and a Roosters game. It was wild in Vegas, man. It really was. It was.
Yeah,
I thought there'd be more Americans there, but imagine flying into from Australia and going to an Australian event in Las Vegas. Everyone's just like throwing flags and bringing models. It was great. It was good times.
That's awesome, man. Great that you got to experience that. Such a cool story.
Gotta do it again next year. But yes, this is New Amsterdam Radio, the podcast for creators, man. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, man.
Oh, my.
Thanks so much for listening to New Amsterdam Radio. Learn more about the show at newamsterdam.com. That's KNEW Amsterdam.com. Until next time, this city is yours.